thought was an exceptionally large base for the statue was, in fact, a massive defensive structure shaped like an 11-pointed star. There were soldiers stationed here right up through the Civil War, Erica continued, and this wasn't the only place. There were more than a dozen forts around the city at one time or another. Governor's Island, Battery Park, Fort Washington, Fort Brooklyn. Eventually, during the late 1800s, the military decided it needed a lookout tower, so it could see threats coming from out at sea. So they built the statue? You didn't really think it was a gift, Erica laughed. From France? Why would France give us a giant statue of a woman? To celebrate our nation's 100th birthday. Oh, please, I can't believe you bought that story. Now that I thought about it, the tale of how the United States had ended up with the Statue of Liberty did seem kind of odd. And yet I couldn't help feeling defensive. I'm pretty sure everyone bought that story, even the Park Service. I pointed to a placard on the wall, which was all about how the French had donated the statue to us. All part of the disinformation campaign, Erica informed me. It was actually pretty brilliant, making the tower a statue. They put an observation platform 300 feet up around the torch, high enough to see for 30 miles in any direction, and convinced the whole world it was some crazy art project. Is that where Alexander and Cyrus are right now? The torch is too exposed. They're in the crown, keeping an eye on our surroundings, waiting for the coast to be clear. Aren't they worried that someone else in the CIA knows the statue is a fortress and will come looking for us here? No. Apparently most of the history of these places has been forgotten, even by the government itself. Back when this statue was built, it was the tallest structure for miles. But once skyscrapers started going up in the city, they offered better vantage points, and this place lost its purpose. The government stopped using it, and over the years, they bought their own disinformation about it. Granddad knows the truth only because his father told him, and Granddad hasn't told anyone about it except us. I got to my feet, keeping the towels wrapped around me, taking in the entire museum. It was amazing to be inside it at night, just as it had been amazing to be inside the Washington Monument at night with Erica. There was something almost magical about being let in on such great national secrets, to be one of only a handful of people who knew the truth. Is there any iconic American monument that wasn't secretly built for national security reasons? I asked. Erica pursed her lips, considering this. I don't think the Gateway Arch in St. Louis was. It's too wobbly. And frankly, what's the point of a lookout tower in the middle of the country? How about the Seattle Space Needle? A big tower right near the border with Canada? Erica asked. Come on, that's definitely for security. Really? We're worried about Canada? Erica shrugged. You can't trust anybody. How's your strength? Do you think you can climb? I took a few tentative steps. To my surprise, despite everything that had happened, I felt perfectly fine. Yes. Then let's go up. They're waiting for us. I'd been to New York City once before, on a family vacation when I was 8. I'd wanted to see the Statue of Liberty then, but my parents hadn't thought to get tickets in advance, and it had been sold out. I'd had to settle for taking the Staten Island ferry past the island and jealously staring at the tourists whose families had planned ahead. Now I was getting a private tour of the statue itself. True, I'd been duped by Spider, pursued by the CIA, and nearly drowned in the harbor, but for a few minutes, life was pretty sweet. After picking out a t-shirt and fashioning a beach towel skirt for myself, Erica and I took the elevator up through the statue's base, then climbed the rest of the way. The inside of Lady Liberty was a web of steel struts going in every direction, with a double staircase spiraling through it all like a coil of DNA. We arrived at the viewing platform inside the crown, to find Alexander and Cyrus pressed against the glass, keeping an eye on the goings-on outside. Both wore t-shirts and beach towel skirts as well. Alexander smiled warmly upon seeing me. The effects of the chloroform appeared to have worn off. "Ah, Ben," he exclaimed, "you're looking well, all things considered." Cyrus, on the other hand, glowered at me.
"Glad to see you finally decided to join us."
"He wasn't slacking off, Grandad," Erica protested. "He was unconscious." Cyrus waved this off, as though there wasn't a big difference.
"You never catch me losing consciousness in the middle of a mission," he grumbled.
Erica frowned. "He almost died because of that stunt you pulled."
"I did what I had to do to shake our pursuers," Cyrus said. "I didn't know he was going to get tangled up in the anchor line."
"You could have at least given us some warning," Erica retorted. "Wait," I said, "you blew up the boat, not them?"
"I didn't have any other choice," Cyrus replied. "They had us surrounded, so I faked our deaths."
"Did it work?" I asked. Cyrus shot me a nasty glance.
"Do I look like an amateur to you? Of course it worked. I must have faked my own death 50 times over the years. I once convinced the entire KGB that I'd been buried in an avalanche in Kamchatka. No one can die like I can.
The feds are still searching the area, Alexander said. He waved us over to the windows, then pointed almost directly down, to where 5 boats were sweeping the water with spotlights. But Dad chose the perfect spot to blow the boat. The water's quite deep right there, very tough to drag for bodies.
Looks like they're searching the island just to make sure, Erica observed.
Sure enough, a few teams of men were moving about the perimeter of the fortress at the statue's base, scanning the island with flashlights.
Of course they are, Cyrus sniffed, but they won't search here. The front doors won't show any sign of a breach, because we didn't come through them, and they don't know there's any other entrance. They've been hunting for hours now and haven't found diddly squat. Pretty soon they'll decide this is a goose chase and draw down till daylight. That's when we'll make our move.
How? I asked.
That depends. Cyrus turned me away from the window to face him. Right before the boat blew, you said you knew what Spider was up to. Care to finally share that with us?
With all the excitement, I'd forgotten all about my revelation. Almost dying can have that effect.
Oh, right, I said. Spider's going to launch missiles at targets in New York City.
The Hales looked from one to another, then back to me.
You're sure? Erica asked.
99%, I told her.
You were right. Spider did want me for something, but they were so sneaky I didn't even realize what I was doing for them.
The whole time I've been there, they've been giving me all these math problems involving missiles. I thought they were for class, because they were tucked away with a whole bunch of other evil math problems about ballistics and projectile parabolas and stuff like that. But they weren't for class at all. They were for real missiles.
What kind of problems were they? Cyrus asked.
Complex targeting issues, mostly. Like, really complex. I gave Spider everything they'd need to program their missiles to hit precise targets around here.
Cyrus scowled, not quite convinced. And they recruited a kid to do that?
Ben isn't a normal kid, Erica told him. When it comes to math, there's not many adults who can do what he can. And we practically gift-wrapped him for Spider.
I blushed. This was the closest thing to a compliment Erica had ever given me. Plus, I had the added bonus of secretly working for you. Not only did they use me to feed you information, but they also got me to do their dirty work for them.
Erica frowned, angry at herself. They're always one step ahead of us, if not 20.
I felt angry at myself, too, upset at being used, but I was determined not to let Spider get away with it.
We know what their plan is, I said, hopefully. So that's something, right?
We only think we know what their plan is, Cyrus muttered. I haven't heard much evidence to support this idea yet.
Erica turned to me.
What else do you have?
I'm pretty sure Joshua Halal programmed the missiles himself, I said. I think that's what he was doing in the underground lair the night I saw him there, when he was using Russian. Spider got Russian missiles before. They could do it again.
But you don't speak Russian, Cyrus reminded me, so you can't be sure.
True, I nodded, then thought of something. But I do remember numbers well. Two of the ones Joshua entered were 40.7057 and 73.9964. If he was really programming missiles, then those are probably coordinates.
Let's see.
Erica whipped out her phone, which was sealed in a waterproof pouch, and typed the numbers into it.
Wait, I warned. Can't Spider or the feds find us if you go online?
I scrambled the GPS function, she told me. Anyone tries to track us through this, and they'll think we're in Parsippany.
Okay, got a match.
Her face suddenly filled with concern.
You are right, Ben. They're coordinates, all right. For the Brooklyn Bridge.
We all reflexively looked out the windows and across the harbor, to where the Brooklyn Bridge was lit up in the night. Cyrus now looked far more convinced I was right, and far more worried as well. They had me do problems about how much explosive was needed to blow up bridges, too, I said. I worked out the payloads and the best places to strike the targets to provide maximum damage.
Why would you give them that? Cyrus demanded angrily.
It was for class, I snapped back. I was trying to be a good student. You wanted me to fit in, so I was doing it. I didn't ask to be sent undercover to evil spy school. That was your idea.
Cyrus recoiled angrily, unhappy with how I'd spoken to him. But before he could reply, Erica stepped between us.
Ben's right, Granddad. About everything, I think. That day at Sandy Hook, Murray wasn't only taking pictures of the missile silos. He was also photographing the bridges in Manhattan.
Oh, I said, I thought he was taking pictures of you and the other girls.
So did I, Erica admitted, but he was only pretending to do that to hide what he was really taking pictures of. Spider's targets. Spider just destroyed the Nike missiles designed to protect New York City.
So now there's nothing to stop them from attacking the bridges here, except us.
I can't believe this, Alexander said, stunned.
It has to be what they're planning, I said. All the evidence adds up.
Oh, I get that, Alexander replied. It's just that Spider used missiles in their last big scheme, and now they're using them again? That's not very creative.
Maybe they got a good deal on missiles last time and had a lot left over, Erica suggested. This isn't about creativity, Cyrus barked. There's no rule that says bad guys can't use the same weapons two times in a row. This is about causing chaos and mayhem, and nothing does that better than a missile.
He swung back toward me.
So please tell me you know where they are.
Back at Hidden Forest, I said.
Cyrus narrowed his eyes.
That's not possible. We've been watching that place for weeks.
The missiles have been there the whole time, I told him.
Alexander looked skeptical as well.
You're telling us that Spider hid a bunch of stolen missiles in a suburban housing development?
It's not a real housing development, I explained. It's camouflage for the missiles. Spider's hiding them in plain sight.
But there's no silos, Erica told me.
There are, I countered. They're just disguised as septic tanks. Cyrus and Erica were taken aback for a moment, but then nodded understanding. Alexander didn't.
What are you talking about? He asked.
There are huge holes all over the property, I explained, easily big enough to hold missiles underground. They're marked as being for septic tanks, and they even look like there are septic tanks in them. But the other night, I was on top of one, and there was a big hinge on the edge of it. The only reason you'd have a hinge there is if the top was supposed to swing open, and you don't need the top to swing open on a septic tank.
But you do on a missile silo, Cyrus concluded, shaking his head in amazement. You have to hand it to Spider. They're clever. I looked at the satellite photos of that place a dozen times and never thought twice about the septic tanks.
I said, I'll bet if you pulled up the sewer grid for the area, you'd find that Hidden Forest is attached to it, and that they don't need a septic system at all.
I don't think that's necessary. Your logic sounds right on this.
Erica brought up an image she'd saved on her phone. This is a satellite photo of Hidden Forest from 2 days ago. Looks like there are 10 separate septic tank holes, meaning they've got 10 missiles.
10 bridges down means a lot of chaos and mayhem, Cyrus stared out the windows at the city. Far more than anything Spider has done before. It'll bring New York to a standstill for months.
He glanced downward and checked the scene at the base of the statue.
We can't afford to waste another moment. Let's move.
He headed for the stairs.
Alexander glanced out the window himself. But there's still a search party down there.
That's only the Shadow Force, Cyrus started down through Lady Liberty's head. Looks like most everyone else has been sent home. Besides, we need at least one team here so we can get off this island.
How so? I asked, following him.
Because we're going to steal their boat, Cyrus replied.
Erica fell in behind me.
How are the four of us supposed to infiltrate Hidden Forest by ourselves? The security there was tight enough to begin with, and I can guarantee you Spider's going to jack it up for D-Day. The control center is in the middle of the whole complex, 2 stories underground. It'll be impossible for us to penetrate that. Plus, most of our weapons are now at the bottom of the harbor, Alexander added.
We'd need a whole platoon of agents to even make a dent in that place, Erica said morosely.
Is there any CIA agent we can trust? Anyone we can explain the situation to?
Not that I can think of, Cyrus muttered.
I stopped on the stairs, halfway through the Statue of Liberty's neck, struck by a thought.
I don't think we need to explain anything, I said. I know how to get the CIA there. We just need the right bait.
And what would that be? Erica asked.
Us, I said.
Chapter 20 Bait Liberty Island, September 18, 00:00 hours. Our clothes were all hanging in the bathrooms in the museum in the base of the statue. Cyrus had dismantled the hand dryers and rejiggered them to blow hot air constantly over our things. It had been only moderately effective. The shoulders and lower legs of my outfit were still cold and damp, while the area around my crotch was so overheated I could have baked a potato in my pants. However, there was no option but to suit up and move out. There was little chance of escaping the island and overthrowing Spider while wearing beach towel skirts. The secret passage out of the statue began in a long-forgotten storage room and tunneled to a trap door hidden deep in the largest clump of trees on the island. We emerged and set off after the lone crew of CIA agents still hunting for us. There were 6 of them, but they were spread out in 3 groups of 2, and after hours of repeatedly wandering the same 15 acres without finding so much as a trace of us, they had decided this was a pointless assignment and dropped their guard.
The island wasn't well lit, and there were plenty of shadows to lurk in, so Cyrus and Erica were able to quickly reduce the number of conscious agents to 4, then 2, and then none. Alexander and I tied them all up, then stripped them of their weapons, badges, and communication devices. Their boat was moored at the ferry dock. The CIA had commandeered a Coast Guard vessel, along with a Coast Guard captain, who didn't look very happy about the assignment. He was sitting in the bridge, playing a game on his phone. He didn't pay much attention when Alexander wandered onto the boat, looking like any other CIA agent, until Alexander jammed his stolen gun in the guy's ear and ordered him to take us to the mainland. The captain quickly agreed and even dismantled his radio himself, so he understood he wasn't going to try anything stupid and get himself killed. The few boats still trying to find remnants of us in the water were on the other side of the island, so no one noticed when we pulled away from the dock. New Jersey isn't far from Liberty Island. Parts are so close that if the water hadn't been full of garbage and toxic waste, we could have swam it. The trip back to where we'd left our car didn't take long. On the way, I borrowed Erica's phone and dialed Zoe Zibel. I never forgot a phone number, especially that of the one person in the whole world I was certain I could trust. She answered groggily, roused from sleep.
"Hello?"
"Hey," I said. "It's Ben."
"Smokescreen!"
Zoe was instantly awake. She had lowered her voice to a whisper, but I could still hear the mix of excitement and concern in it.
"What's happening out there? The word is you and the Hales have joined the dark side. I don't believe it, of course, but the rest of the CIA seems to."
"Believe it," I said. "I have joined the dark side."
"No, you haven't. If you'd really joined the dark side, you certainly wouldn't be telling me that you had. You'd be telling me that you hadn't."
"So if I said I hadn't joined the dark side, then you'd think I had?"
"Never. I know you, Ben, better than any of these other idiots do. No matter what you tell me, I know you're not a traitor."
"I am, Zoe. I swear. I'm a traitor to my country and very dangerous, so I need you to alert the school administration that you know exactly where I'm going to be 2 hours from now." Confusion now edged into Zoe's voice.
"I'm not going to do that. You're my friend. Why would I turn you in?"
"Because I'm working with Spider now, and we're about to launch missiles at New York City."
"What?"
"Get a pen. I'm going to give you the exact coordinates." I heard Zoe fumbling around her desk for a few moments.
"Okay."
I gave her the exact latitude and longitude of Hidden Forest, which Cyrus had calculated while keeping an eye on the place. Then I had her read it back to me, just to make sure she had it right. I didn't want her to send a CIA team to attack an innocent gated community by mistake. "I need you to report this right away," I told her. "Tell your resident advisor and have her wake the principal and every professor she can find. Don't tell them that I asked you to turn me in, though. They'll be suspicious of that. Tell them that you figured out where I've been. Tell them you always suspected I was no good, and so you put a tracer in my old phone. You've known where I've been all along, but you didn't know I'd joined the enemy until you heard the news a few hours ago. And now you're tracking me, and you know I'm heading back to Spider's secret headquarters."
"They'll never believe that I was suspicious of you," Zoe argued. "I'm always going on about how great you are.
Which you only did so that I'd drop my guard around you and let you get close to me. Very sneaky of you, really. Probably worth some sort of commendation when the CIA follows up on your tip and captures me. By the way, just so the CIA doesn't get confused when they get there, Spider's top secret headquarters looks like a gated residential community."
"You're kidding, right?"
"Nope. You know how sneaky they are." The boat was pulling up by the dock where we'd left the car. It was deserted. Cyrus thwacked the captain on the back of the skull with his gun, and the man collapsed in a heap. Erica trussed him like a rodeo calf.
Zoe said, "Ben, this is crazy."
"Not really." I thought back to everything that had happened since I'd had to steal a bulldozer that afternoon. "Honestly, it's not even in the top 3 craziest things I've done today. But I need you to do it. You have to convince everyone you know where I am and that they need to send a big force out there to stop me. Let them know the Hales and I are holed up inside the compound and that we're plotting something very big with Spider. Something that'll make everything else Spider's tried look like a Sunday school picnic." Cyrus steered the boat up against a small pier and cut the engine. Alexander leapt ashore and tied the mooring lines. Erica signaled me to move quickly. Zoe asked, "Can you at least explain what's going on?" "It'd take way too long," I said, scrambling off the boat. "You'll just have to trust me. I need you to do this right now. Every second counts."
"All right," Zoe said. "I'll turn you in."
"Thanks. You're a good friend." Just past our car, there was an enormous construction site where a huge section of the pier was being rebuilt. There were 4 cranes, mountains of steel beams, and a fleet of 12 cement trucks, and a large sign proclaiming, "Lou Brothers Construction." I froze in mid-stride. Until that moment, I'd assumed that Lou Brothers was a tiny company created by Spider solely to build Hidden Forest. But now I realized what it really was. A huge corporation that did multi-million-dollar government projects. I have to go, I told Zoe. I had just figured out the rest of Spider's plan.
Chapter 21 Siege Spider Agent Training Facility, September 18, 0200 hours. Cyrus laid out his plans for thwarting Spider on the drive back to Hidden Forest. I had been hoping that my assignment would be something along the lines of, wait in a nice, safe place while the rest of us infiltrate Spider's compound and do all the dangerous work. Instead, I was told I'd be playing a crucial role in the attack. It was my job to lead the way into the underground control center.
Frankly, I'd prefer a greenhorn like you stay well clear of the action, Cyrus admitted, but you're the only one who's been inside Spider's lair and the only one who knows all the people on the other side. That makes you our key asset. And we can't just have you sitting on the radio talking us through it. You need to be there in the thick of it in case things change, or we lose radio contact. Don't worry, though. We'll protect you as well as we can, seeing as you won't be much use to us if you're dead.
I didn't find that very reassuring, but I accepted my fate and girded myself for battle. Thankfully, we now had some equipment, the weapons and walkie-talkies we'd liberated from the agents on Liberty Island, and Cyrus had left one last steel case in the car, filled with assorted other supplies he'd amassed over the past weeks, everything we'd need to infiltrate Spider's compound. By the time we arrived back at Hidden Forest, the CIA was already there. They'd moved faster than I'd expected, although we'd had to make a pit stop at a White Castle in Newark. None of us had eaten since lunch, and Cyrus said it was a bad idea to fight the enemy when you were hypoglycemic. The CIA had shown up in full force, led by Agent Rafferty, who obviously had a chip on his shoulder as far as Cyrus Hale was concerned. There were more than 60 agents spread out around the perimeter of the gated community. We had to park well down the road and slip quietly through the field so they wouldn't notice our approach. However, they weren't very focused on what was behind them. They were focused on Hidden Forest instead. We slipped into a clump of trees along the CIA's line, not far from where Rafferty had set up his command center. I couldn't see any Spider agents on the far side of the wall, but I had no doubt they were there, watching the CIA closely. In an odd way, the whole setup reminded me of a medieval siege. Spider was holed up in the modern-day equivalent of a walled city, and the CIA was looking to breach it the same way an army of knights would. Beyond the wall, I could even see the rec center high in the middle of the compound, like a glass-walled castle complete with a dungeon beneath it. The CIA was ready for battle, every agent bristling with guns and knives. Armored cars had towed in mortars as well. Once they were all in position, Rafferty got on a bullhorn and spoke to everyone at Hidden Forest.
This is Agent Harold Rafferty of the Central Intelligence Agency. We have you surrounded. Cease all hostile acts at once, or we will have no choice but to take you by force.
Do you believe this guy? Cyrus muttered. Time is of the essence, and he's giving warnings like a hall monitor. We need to kick this assault in gear.
With that, he whipped out his gun and took a few potshots at the community wall. Spider agents reflexively returned fire. The wall around Hidden Forest turned out to be more medieval than I'd thought. There were secret holes built into it to shoot through, the same way castle walls had slits for crossbows. The CIA agents immediately shot back. Rafferty shouted at everyone to stand down, but Cyrus blasted the bullhorn out of his hands, muting him. After that, the assault spiraled out of control. Most of the activity took place at the weakest points in the community's perimeter, where the CIA hoped to break through. The front gates and the spot where I'd driven the bulldozer through the wall that afternoon. Spider had hastily patched the hole in the wall with plywood and strung electric wire across the top, but it had been a rush job. They apparently hadn't expected the CIA to show up. Everyone was so busy trading shots they didn't notice us. During their days of observation, Cyrus and Erica had pinpointed the perfect place to breach the perimeter, a towering oak tree 30 feet from the wall. We scrambled up it as high as we could go, then unloaded the supplies Cyrus had amassed to create a homemade zip line. First, Erica fired a grappling hook over the wall. It was amazing how handy those things were once you became a spy. It caught in the upper story of an unfinished framed house, after which we fastened our end of the wire around a tree branch, cinched it taut, then clipped onto it with carabiners and rock climbing belts. Cyrus and Alexander went first to make sure it was safe. No one from Spider or the CIA seemed to notice them as they glided silently toward the wall,
The moment they crossed over the wall, however, alarms went off. Sirens wailed so loudly they could even be heard over the gunfire.
Shoot, Erica muttered.
They must have some sort of laser system to detect intruders. We better move now.
Now, I repeated, though in a much more frightened tone of voice. But Spider knows we're coming over the wall.
No, Spider knows someone just came over the wall, so they'll be looking for invaders inside the perimeter, not above it.
But won't we be inside the perimeter soon?
Rather than argue the point, Erica simply launched herself down the zipline and dragged me along with her. The ride down the wire took only a few seconds, but it felt like weeks. En route, I could see Spider agents racing through the darkness, converging on the frame house where Cyrus and Alexander were now holed up. I kept waiting for someone to spot us on the wire, where we were sitting ducks, or at least gliding ducks. But Cyrus and Alexander started shooting, grabbing Spider's attention, and we slid to safety unnoticed. We alighted in the upper story of the frame house. Cyrus and Alexander were on the far side from us, taking cover behind a stack of plywood.
"Get going," Cyrus ordered us. "We'll draw their fire."
"We will?"
Alexander asked nervously, but Cyrus had already started shooting again. Spider's agents shot back at them, filling the stack of plywood with more holes than a loaf of Swiss cheese. Erica and I went in the other direction, leaping out the back of the house and skulking away before anyone could see us. We then worked our way toward the rec center, moving in a wide arc around the Spider agents, trading shots with Cyrus and Alexander. Despite all the firefights around us, it wasn't that hard to steer clear of the enemy now that we were on the inside. All of Spider's men were busily fending off Cyrus, Alexander, or other CIA agents. Even so, we did our best to be stealthy. Two helicopters raced overhead. They were unmarked, so it was impossible to tell whose side they were on. As we crept through hidden forest, I managed to catch a glimpse of some of Spider's agents. I recognized a few of my instructors among them, like Mrs. Henderson and Mr. Seabrook. I didn't see Joshua Halal or any of my fellow students, but then the compound was large, and there were plenty of places they could have been. Our route took us past one of the septic tanks. There was a loud mechanical hum coming from inside the hole. I peered in to see that the cement lid was opening, raised by hydraulic pistons, revealing that there was, indeed, a missile silo hidden beneath it. The shaft dropped several stories down into the earth. The missile was a big, metallic Cold War relic with Soviet lettering on the sides. I'd been right. Spider had Russian missiles.
"Come on," Erica ordered. "They're preparing to fire. We don't have much time."
She dropped any attempt at stealth and bolted for the rec center. I took off after her. We raced out of the construction zone and cut across the croquet lawn. In the distance, some agents from Spider spotted us. They yelled something. We were too far away and there was too much other noise to hear it properly, but it was probably something along the lines of, "Stop or we'll shoot." We didn't stop, so they shot. We dove over a decorative hedge. Bullets whizzed over our heads and shattered the glass walls of the rec center, which saved us the trouble of going through the door. Erica shot back, laying down cover fire as I scrambled across the carpet of glass shards, racing for the rock wall. It occurred to me that I wasn't panicked. I wasn't screaming like I'd done while being chased by a horde of first-year students during the Saxa. Maybe this was because I'd matured into a better spy since then, or maybe it was because the simulations at spy school had prepared me well for a real-life action sequence. But I was impressed by how well I was handling the situation, all things considered. I reached the rock wall and twisted the proper handhold. The secret door hissed open. I held it that way while Erica raced for it. In the distance, well past the croquet lawn, I could see the muzzle flares as our attackers opened fire again. Erica slid through the doorway and spoke into her walkie-talkie.
"Granddad, we've got some company en route to the rec center. Think you can hold them off?"
"Sure thing, sweetheart," Cyrus replied. "I'm on it."
Erica then led the way down the stairs. I knew it wasn't very chivalrous of me to let her do this, but then Erica was adept in all forms of combat, while I had the martial arts skills of a bowl of jello. She swept the hall at the bottom, then signaled to me that it was safe to follow, while she moved on to the kitchenette in the conference room. There were no enemy agents in either one.
"You can stop poking around out there," Murray called from the control room. "The party's in here."
Erica frowned, then led the way to the control room. There were fewer people inside than I expected. Joshua Halal wasn't there, or any of the other adults. Instead, there was only Nefarious and Murray. Nefarious was seated on the main couch, staring at the TV screens, which were displaying dozens of security camera feeds from all over the property at once. Most of them were showing the battles outside, though a few were trained on the missile silos as their hatches opened, and one filmed the hall we had just come through. Nefarious was so focused on the screens, he didn't so much as glance at us. From the doorway, I could see only the back of his head. He was holding the custom-made joystick I'd seen on my previous visit to the lair. Murray was seated in a lounge chair to the side of the couch, his feet propped up on the coffee table. He had no weapon, only a half-eaten frozen yogurt sundae. Being Murray, he had raided the toppings bar, choosing everything from crumbled Oreos to sour gummy worms.
"You didn't really think you could sneak up on us in here, did you?" he chided. "We've got cameras everywhere. But then, I pretty much expected you to show up, Ben. That's your standard move, isn't it? Spider's about to put a plan into action. You arrive just minutes before it happens and try to thwart it. Like clockwork."
Erica aimed her gun directly at Murray's smiling face.
"Oh, we're not trying to thwart your plans. We're thwarting them. Shut off the missiles."
Murray shrugged helplessly.
"It can't be done. Everything's pre-programmed. And after that little stunt you pulled on the last mission, Ben, we've hardwired the electrical systems, so you can't just yank the plug and be done with it."
"I wasn't talking to you," Erica growled. "I know you're not smart enough to control the missiles. I was talking to your pal on the couch. Nefarious, abort the missiles or I shoot both of you."
"How about this instead?" Murray asked. "You drop your weapons, or Ashley shoots both of you."
There were two foreboding clicks behind us. I spun around to find Ashley there, holding a gun in each hand, one for me and one for Erica. She looked like she felt pretty bad about this, though.
"Sorry," she said. "I really don't want to shoot you, but I will."
"How did you," I began.
"Get behind you when you'd already swept the area?" Ashley finished. "There's a secret hiding place behind the sundae bar. I guess you never got the full tour of the complex."
She looked to Erica.
"You're still holding your gun."
Erica released her weapon, letting it clatter to the floor.
"Much better," Murray said, scooping more yogurt into his mouth.
"You're pathetic," Erica told him. "I can't believe you're using missiles again. Where's the creativity in that?"
"Well, we got a good deal on them," Murray admitted. "They're cheaper when you buy in bulk. And after we'd gone through all the trouble to smuggle them into the country, we figured we might as well use them. Plus, we learned from the mistakes we made last time. Sorry, Ben, but there'll be no thwarting our plans tonight."
At that moment, the room began to shake. There was a tremendous rumble from behind the walls. On the TV screens, the 10 missiles each blasted off, streaking toward New York City. We were too late.
Chapter 22. Negotiation. Spider Underground Lair, September 18, 0230 hours. The flares from the missile rockets were so bright they bleached out the TV screens and bathed the entire control center in a pale, eerie light. Erica looked to me. I wasn't used to seeing her worried, but she was worried now.
"How long will it take those to hit their targets?"
"The first will strike in 8 minutes," I said, feeling sick to my stomach. After all, the reason I knew this was because I'd done the math that it allowed Joshua to program the missiles. When they struck and did their damage, I would be partly responsible. I had naively gone undercover, hoping to defeat Spider, and had instead been manipulated by them into doing their dirty work. This wasn't a very good feeling. But then, I still had 8 minutes to fix things. On the TV screens, cameras mounted on the missiles themselves tracked their progress across New Jersey. The landscape flew past beneath them at rocket speed. Farms and suburban communities and clumps of forest. It looked weirdly like the images from the video games Nefarious had spent all his time playing. The view from a pilot as his plane hurtled into battle. I turned my attention to Ashley, because, unlike Nefarious, she was making eye contact with me, and because I suspected she wasn't really evil at heart.
"Put down your guns," I said. "Please, you can still abort the missiles. If you don't, you're going to have the blood of thousands of innocent people on your hands."
Ashley shook her head.
"Innocent people aren't going to die. You don't know what we're really doing here."
"I know exactly what you're doing," I replied.
"You're blowing up all the major bridges around the city so that you can get paid billions to rebuild them."
Ashley's eyes widened in surprise.
"Holy cow!" Murray cried from the couch. "You figured out our evil scheme again! Every time I think we've got you fooled, you still work it out. How'd you do it this time?"
"I saw a Lou Brothers construction site in New Jersey," I told him. "A big one, rebuilding an entire shipping pier. Which meant Spider's construction company was much bigger than I realized. So we Googled the company. With the exception of this community, Lou Brothers only does government work, mostly large infrastructure projects, like bridges."
"Nice work, as usual," Murray grinned, revealing several rainbow sprinkles stuck in his teeth. To be honest, Spider didn't even see the potential of the construction company at first. We originally started Lou Brothers as a money laundering scheme, but then found that being evil was standard procedure in the large-scale construction business. In fact, we were shocked by how corrupt and deceitful some of our rival companies were, and we are terrorists. To get jobs, everyone uses bribes, blackmail, kickbacks, and threats. We started to do the same thing, and we were good at it. Before you knew it, Lou Brothers was bringing in more money than our illegal schemes. So then we started thinking, why wait for the government to come to us with construction jobs? Why not create the jobs ourselves? I mean, if some shady international organization paid us to blow up a bridge, we'd get paid a few million, tops, while some lucky construction company would get billions to rebuild it. The real money isn't in knocking things down. It's in putting them back up again. So why should we let some other sleazeballs make big profits from our terrorism when we could be the sleazeballs making the big profits ourselves?
You're creating a fake terrorist attack just to cash in on the emergency rebuilding funds? Erica asked.
Yes, Murray crowed, and a real doozy of an attack, too. The 10 major bridges and tunnels into Manhattan all going down at once. The way we figure it, if you only knock out one route into the city, it's a crisis. But New York can still get by. But if you take out 10 routes at the same time, you cripple the place. Doomsday will have nothing on this. The city, the state, and the federal government will be desperate to get everything rebuilt as quickly as possible, and they'll have to pay through the nose to do it. It just so happens that Lou Brothers is perfectly prepared to handle such a cataclysmic event, with all the connections, personnel, and raw materials on hand necessary to rebuild quickly, and for maximum profit.
So you see, Ashley added gleefully, what we're doing here isn't so bad, really. It's not slaughter thousands of innocent people, evil. It's more like inconvenience millions of people for a few months, evil. People are still going to die, I told her. You're detonating 10 missiles around the biggest city in America. But we're doing it in the middle of the night, Ashley countered. No one's going to be on those bridges or in those tunnels at 2:30 in the morning.
We specifically picked this time to minimize human pain and suffering, Murray added. So there.
On the TV screens, the missiles were screaming over the outskirts of the New York metropolitan area. The farms were gone. Now there were only suburban homes, shopping malls, and supermarkets. In the distance, the skyscrapers of Manhattan were getting closer every second. That doesn't mean no one is going to be on those bridges, I said, keeping my eyes locked firmly on Ashley's. What's going to happen to those people when they explode? What's going to happen to the people in the tunnels when they collapse and flood? And what do you think is going to happen to everyone in Manhattan after you cut them off from the rest of the country? There'll be panics, food shortages, power outages. What you're doing here is going to lead to death and riots and agony just so you can make some money off their misery. Ashley shook her head violently. No, you've got it all wrong. I don't, I told her, and deep down inside you know that's true. No, she said, you are wrong. We're not going to just make some money off their misery. We're going to make an incredible amount of money off their misery. The moment she said this, any trace of doubt or concern in her eyes faded. So did any trace of the sweet, good-hearted girl I thought she was. Instead, she showed her true self, and it was evil. As though all the death and destruction Spider was about to cause was thrilling to her. You think those people are going to suffer? She asked. Well, no one suffered like me. I trained my whole life for the Olympics. I gave up my entire childhood to practice 16 hours a day. I never had fun. I never had any friends. I never had a single piece of candy. And for what? So that some stupid judge could make a mistake on my score and keep me from my rightful place on Team USA? Don't blame the rest of the world for your failure, Erica said coldly. That judge was right. She was not! Ashley roared. She was blind! I saw the Olympic trials, Erica informed her. You blew that landing. I did not! Ashley was trembling with rage now, her arms shaking, her face twitching. I half expected fire to explode from her eye sockets. I stuck that landing! I stuck it! I was terrified that, in her fury, she would blow Erica and me away. And she very well might have, if Cyrus and Alexander hadn't shut the power down at that moment. We'd planned that part. The idea was Erica and I would try to deal with Spider via negotiation, while the others would try to simply stop the missiles by hitting the power supply. The entire room went dark in an instant as every light, TV screen, and piece of electrical equipment went out. Erica and I were prepared for this, while the others were caught by surprise. From beside me I heard the distinct sound of Erica going on the attack, followed by the wheeze of Ashley getting punched hard somewhere painful,
and then the clatter of her guns on the floor as Erica disarmed her. Then the backup generators whirred into action. The lights and TVs and electronics came back to life, and the room looked almost exactly the same, save for a few small changes. Instead of holding us at gunpoint, Ashley was now fighting Erica, and despite having started at a severe disadvantage, she was fighting well. Normally, Erica would have knocked her opponent unconscious by this point, but Ashley had proved more formidable than expected. She was using her personal combination of gymnastics and martial arts, blocking Erica's attacks and launching her own. Nefarious and Murray were exactly where they'd been before. Nefarious hadn't moved. Murray had spilled his sundae down the front of his sweatshirt. For the first time since our arrival, he looked peeved.
"Oh, great," he muttered. "Now look what you guys made me do."
The one other thing that had changed was that, on the TV screens, the landscape was still hurtling past, but now an emergency message was flashing in big red letters. Autopilot disengaged. The missiles began to drop from the sky, moving toward homes and schools rather than the bridges.
"The navigation systems are blown," Nefarious said, the first words he'd spoken all night.
"Guess it's up to you then," Murray told him.
Nefarious flicked a button on the side of his customized joystick. The emergency message disappeared, now replaced with the words "manual override activated." The missiles straightened up and resumed their flights. Suddenly, it was evident what Nefarious had been doing on the couch all those hours. He hadn't been playing video games. He'd been training to pilot multiple high-speed missiles to their targets at once. It couldn't have been easy, but he was doing it perfectly. As usual, he was also giving a mumbling commentary on what he was doing. "Just altitude on missile 5, orient trajectory on 9, increased thrust for 2. On the screens, the missiles moved steadily over New Jersey, closing in on Manhattan. I lunged toward Nefarious, but Murray moved faster, producing a gun from under a throw pillow and aiming it at me.
"Oh, no," he taunted. "It's not going to be that easy, Ben."
"Just shoot him," Ashley shouted, launching another flurry of kicks at Erica. "Kill Ben before he thwarts us again."
"He's not going to thwart us this time," Murray said coolly. "It's out of his hands."
"So what?" Ashley screamed. "Do it anyhow. He's the enemy."
"You actually had a crush on this girl?" Erica asked me, fending off Ashley's attacks. "She's psychotic." "Apparently I misjudged her," I said sheepishly.
"Gee, you think?"
Erica asked. I tried to keep calm, but my head was spinning. I was reeling from discovering Ashley's true colors and desperately trying to figure out what I could possibly do to stop the missiles. The missiles neared the Jersey shore. Sandy Hook was coming up fast. If there had still been Nike missiles there, they would have already been launched to take out the ones en route to the city. But of course, they couldn't be launched because Spider had destroyed them. Soon there'd be nothing between Spider's missiles and their targets except open water, and the kid who was still controlling them. Now that Ashley had proven to be more evil than I'd realized, I turned my attention to the other evil spy school student, hoping he might be more reasonable. "Nefarious, think about what you're doing. This isn't a game anymore. When those missiles strike, it will happen in the real world."
"And you'll make real money," Murray cried. "Tons of it."
"No, you won't," I warned. "Spider only told you guys that to get you to do their dirty work for them." For the first time, Nefarious took his eyes off the screens in front of him. It was for only a fraction of a second, a fleeting glance my way, but there was concern in it.
"Don't listen to him," Murray warned. "No one at Spider conned us. They wouldn't do that to me."
"Then where are they?" I asked. "I haven't seen them anywhere around here tonight."
"Joshua told us himself that Spider was going to get away with this because all the evidence would point to some Fall Guys."
"Well, you're the Fall Guys." The missiles cleared Sandy Hook and barreled over the harbor toward Manhattan. Erica and Ashley were still battling for the upper hand. Murray shook his head, though it seemed like he was trying to convince himself I was wrong as much as he was trying to convince Nefarious.
"Spider's blaming terrorists for this."
"No, Spider's framing you," I told him. "Joshua and the top brass will make billions, and you'll end up in jail. Unless you abort those missiles." Murray suddenly didn't look so sure of himself anymore. Instead, it was Ashley who yelled at Nefarious.
"He's lying to you! Stay on course!"
The missiles were approaching the lower tip of Manhattan. The 10 of them suddenly veered in different directions, each homing in on a different target.
"Nefarious," I pleaded, "I know you have trouble fitting in, and that makes you angry, but this isn't the solution. The people at Spider aren't your friends. They're using you. If you want to make real friends, you don't do it by being the bad guy. You do it by being the hero. And this is your chance. You can be the hero right now. You can save the city."
The missiles were bearing down on the southernmost bridges now, so close that we could see individual cars on each span. And then the people in the cars. And then... The missiles dipped under the bridges at the last second, missing their targets.
Nefarious had barely moved. He'd made only a few subtle flicks of his wrist, but it had been enough. For the first time since I'd met him, he was smiling.
"No!" Ashley cried. "You idiot! What are you doing? Bring them back around!"
"Ben's right," Nefarious said. "Spider set us up. The CIA has us surrounded. We'll never get away. But Joshua and all the other leaders will."
The missiles, whether they had just avoided their targets or were still en route, suddenly angled sharply upward, rocketing high into the night sky, away from the city and all the people in it. Ashley unleashed another flurry of kicks at Erica.
"So we'll get caught! They'll find a way to spring us!"
"Why would they?"
Nefarious asked. There was a confidence in his voice I'd never heard before. "Then they just have to share the money with us, and they're not going to do that. After all, they're evil." The missiles were still climbing, rising through the atmosphere, leaving the city far behind. Murray's eyes went from the screens to me and back again. He seemed so stunned by Spider's betrayal that, for the first time in his life, he was speechless. Ashley grew even more apoplectic, however. She redoubled her attack on Erica while screaming at Nefarious the entire time.
"You can still fix this! Even if you only hit a few of the targets, we'll still be rich! Don't let Ben confuse you! Spider isn't the enemy here! He is! He's—"
She didn't finish the rest, because Erica punched her in the stomach. Ashley gagged in pain, bending forward, and then Erica nailed her in the jaw with an uppercut, sending her flying. Ashley slammed into the wall and crumpled into a pile. On the screens, miles above the Earth, 9 of the missiles exploded. There was a huge flare of fire, and then their feeds disintegrated into static. But the 10th missile didn't blow. Instead, it arced around and started hurtling back for Earth. Murray looked concerned, but he still kept his gun on me.
"What's happening there?"
he asked Nefarious.
"What are you doing with that one?"
Nefarious jiggled his joystick, concerned. "I'm not doing anything with it. I don't have control over it anymore."
"Then where's it going?"
Murray asked. "Here," I said. Everyone turned to me, worried. "I did the math for this, too," I explained. "It was for extra credit. There's a failsafe built into that rocket in case things go wrong. A homing device." Murray's eyes went wide.
"Why would they send a missile here if things went wrong?"
"No loose ends," I told him. "You all know too much. But the CIA can't make you talk if you're dead."
"You mean they're going to kill me?"
Murray gasped.
"Me? That's not possible. They promised me a house with a jacuzzi tub."
"They lied to you," Erica said. "They are the bad guys." Murray looked as though he'd been punched in the gut himself.
"How much time do we have?"
8 minutes, I told him.
"Then let's get out of here."
Murray dropped his gun and ran for the exit. Nefarious, Erica, and I fell in right behind him. We made it only a few steps. Then we noticed Ashley. She wasn't crumpled on the floor anymore. She was blocking the only exit, and she'd recovered her guns, which she was now pointing at us. "No one's going anywhere," she said.
Chapter 23. Mass Destruction. Spider Underground Lair. September 18, 0240 hours.
"Oh, come on, Ashley," Murray cried. "This is really uncool."
"I'm being uncool?" Ashley screamed. "I'm not the one who just tanked all of our plans and triggered Spider's doomsday scenario. You guys are traitors, and so you're going to die here with these doozers from the CIA."
"Doozers?" Erica asked.
"Dorks plus losers," Nefarious translated.
"Ashley," I began.
"Don't you start with me," she shouted. "You're the biggest traitor of them all. You made me think you were my friend. You said you'd go to Disney World with me, but you were lying the whole time. You're a jerk."
"You should talk," Erica muttered. "You're evil."
"That's not really helping," I told her.
"I'm not evil," Ashley roared. "All I want is what's due to me. I deserve to be rich for all that I've been through. I worked my whole life only to get screwed. I deserve to make the U.S. Olympic team. I stuck that landing. I stuck that—"
She didn't finish the thought, because someone whacked her on the back of the head with a tennis racket. Ashley crumpled into a heap once again, revealing her attacker behind her. Zoe Zibel.
"Hey, Ben,"
she said cheerfully, as though we'd just run into each other in the school cafeteria, rather than in a secret underground enemy lair that was about to blow up.
"Zoe?" I said, stunned. "What are you doing here?"
"I'm on a field trip," she exclaimed. "The CIA let me come on the mission as a reward for turning you in. I came up here on a helicopter with some big-shot agents from Washington. It was super cool." She glanced at Ashley sprawled on the floor and suddenly grew a bit self-conscious.
"It's okay that I knocked her out, isn't it? I mean, it looked like she was going psycho on you guys."
Murray spoke before I could. You did great, Zoe. Really great. Can we get out of here now?
He tried to rush past her, but Zoe cocked the tennis racket over her shoulder like a baseball bat, and he stopped dead.
One more step, and I'll be more than happy to knock you out cold, too,
Zoe snarled. I couldn't help but flash Erica a cocky grin.
I told you friends could be assets.
Erica rolled her eyes, then told Zoe,
We have to evacuate. A missile's en route to blow us up.
Zoe's eyes grew even wider than usual.
What? Why?
It's a long story. Erica pried the gun from Ashley's hand and trained it on Murray and Nefarious. Let's go, she told them. Quickly. Though if either of you tries to escape, I'll shoot you somewhere very painful. Got it?
Murray and Nefarious nodded obediently, then hurried out of the secret lair.
Wait, Nefarious protested. I saved New York. I thought the hero was supposed to make friends, not get arrested. You saved New York? Zoe asked him. That's amazing.
Nefarious now broke into a huge smile. Even though he was about to go to jail and was fleeing for his life, after getting a compliment from Zoe, he looked like the happiest person on earth. I stopped on the way out of the lair and hoisted Ashley onto my shoulder.
You're rescuing her? Erica asked. She's the bad guy.
I'm not leaving her to die, I said.
She just tried to leave you, Erica pointed out. Carrying her is going to slow you down.
I'll be all right, I said, hoping it was true. Erica looked concerned, then hustled after Murray and Nefarious. I followed as quickly as I could. Since Ashley was small, she wasn't very heavy, but carrying her still wasn't easy. I took a final glance at the TV screens in the control room. The remaining missile was still racing our way. Zoe stayed back to help me with Ashley, though she looked nervous about it. As we passed the kitchenette, she gasped with surprise.
Whoa! They have a sundae bar in their secret lair?
With toppings, I said.
We don't even have a sundae bar in our mess hall, Zoe groused. And this rec center is way nicer than ours.
I know, I admitted. But on the other hand, they're evil and we're not.
How'd you find me down here?
Oh, it was Jawa's idea to search this building.
Jawa's here too?
I stumbled on my way up the stairs. Not out of surprise, really. It's very hard to carry an unconscious human up a spiral staircase.
Yeah. Spy school let me pick three friends to come along. So I brought Jawa, because he's almost as smart as you, Chip, because he's tough, and Warren, because he'd have thrown a fit if I didn't pick him.
Technically, we were only supposed to observe the mission, but Chip said it would be lame if we came all this way and just sat by the helicopter. So he ran off and we came after him, and then Jawa noticed the rec center and said we ought to check it out.
We split up to cover more ground. The secret door to the underground lair was open, and I heard you and Murray and then Spandex Girl here going crazy. So I grabbed this tennis racket from the equipment room and came down to see what was going on.
Thank goodness you did, I said. You saved us. Zoe's face lit up with pride.
Yeah, I guess I did.
We emerged from the lair and raced out of the rec center. Erica, Murray, and Nefarious were a good distance ahead of us, although I could still hear Murray.
How could they even think of me as a loose end? I'm not a loose end. I'm a core part of the team.
Maybe they got tired of hearing you whine all the time, Erica told him. I've only been with you a few minutes, and I'm ready to blow you up. High up in the sky overhead, I could see the missile. It looked somewhat like a comet, a red streak of fire and smoke bearing down on us. Hidden Forest was eerily quiet. The battle wasn't raging anymore.
Did the CIA win? I asked.
Big time, Zoe told me. It was pretty much over by the time we got here. All Spider's guys were surrendering, although most of them claimed they didn't even know what Spider was. They said they were all independent contractors.
Most of them were. Where's everyone now?
They evacuated, Jawa said, running up from the basketball courts.
Chip and Warren were with him. Chip had a large duffel bag slung over his shoulder that appeared to be crammed full of equipment. Despite the urgency of the situation, I couldn't help but smile upon seeing my friends.
We should evacuate too, Warren informed us. It seems like something bad is about to happen to this place.
Then why are you still here? Zoe asked.
We were looking for you, Chip told her.
Aw, Zoe gushed. You guys are so sweet.
It was my idea, Warren said.
We have to move fast, I told them. There's less than 4 minutes left till detonation.
We all fell in together and ran for the closest exit, a hole the CIA had blasted in the wall in the construction zone.
Who's the dead chick? Chip asked, pointing to Ashley.
She's not dead, I told him. She's unconscious, and she's a junior spider agent.
She's cute, Chip said. Ugh, Zoe cried. Chip, she's evil.
Maybe on the inside, Chip told her, but she's cute on the outside.
Is that Ashley Sparks, the gymnast? Warren asked.
Yes, I replied, though now she's an evil gymnast.
She was my favorite, Warren exclaimed. She really should have been on the U.S. Olympic team. The judge was blind. She stuck that landing.
So I've heard, I said.
We raced through the sports courts into the construction zone. Now, in addition to the usual construction detritus of bent nails and wood shavings, there was also a great deal of spent bullet casings. Jawa glanced at the duffel bag Chip was carrying.
"What's in there?"
"Sporting goods," Chip replied.
"I got some primo rock climbing gear, a couple of footballs, some bowling shoes."
"Hold on," Warren said. "While we were busy looking for Ben and Zoe, you were stealing stuff?"
"If you take stuff from the bad guys, it doesn't count as stealing," Chip said proudly. "It's payback."
Warren started to argue this point, but he was interrupted by a sudden yelp of surprise from ahead.
"That sounded like Erica," Jawa exclaimed.
I glanced across the construction zone and caught a glimpse of Nefarious and Murray sprinting for the hole in the wall. Murray was always easy to pick out because he had a very distinctive gait. He ran like he had a permanent stomach cramp. However, Erica was nowhere to be seen. I heaved Ashley off my shoulder and shoved her into Chip's arms. "Take her to the authorities," I ordered him, then told Jawa and Zoe, "Catch Murray and the other guy. I'll find Erica." I ran off before anyone could protest. Jawa and Zoe took off after Murray and Nefarious. Both of them were good sprinters, and they moved quickly. Chip wasn't far behind them, even while holding Ashley. He was so strong, carrying the gymnast was like carrying a bag of potato chips. Since I hadn't asked Warren to do anything, he simply ran for safety as fast as he could. Above me, the fireball in the sky was growing quickly as the missile came closer. I ran across the construction zone, trying to approximate what Erica's route had been. "Erica!" I yelled into my walkie-talkie. "Where are you?" Instead of using her own walkie-talkie to respond, Erica simply shouted through the construction site.
"Never mind me! There's no time! Save yourself!"
I scanned the dark landscape around me, but couldn't find any sign of her.
"Darn it, Erica, just tell me where you are!"
"No!"
I pinpointed the sound. It was coming from my right. I ran in that direction and almost pitched into one of the missile silos. The hole was just darkness in the other shadows, perfectly concealed. Erica was 4 feet down, clinging to the cement rim of the silo. There was nothing but a 3-story drop below her. I'd expected that she would have been thrilled to see me. Instead, she frowned.
"Go away!" she yelled. "If you try to help me, we'll both die!"
"I'm not leaving you," I yelled back, searching the area for anything of use. "You're my friend!"
"I told you, having friends in this business only causes trouble!"
I ignored her. There was a generator nearby. It had been shot to pieces in the battle, but the electrical cord was still attached. I tore the cord loose, wrapped one end around my waist, and tossed the other end into the hole.
"Grab this!"
"No, I'll pull you in! Just grab it, or we'll die!"
The missile was now close enough to see, silhouetted against its own flame. I sat on the ground. There was nothing to hold onto nearby except grass. I grabbed on tight and hoped for the best. It didn't work. The moment Erica put her weight on the cord, the grass tore free. I slid quickly toward the hole, desperately digging my heels into the dirt, and barely managed to stop myself mere inches from the edge. The cord tightened around my waist, squeezing my abdomen so hard I thought my organs might get forced out my nose. Thankfully, Erica was quick and agile. It took only a few seconds for her to scramble out of the hole. Instead of relief, there was embarrassment on her face.
"You're an idiot," she told me.
Then she helped me to my feet, and we ran. "What happened back there?" I asked.
"Murray got the jump on me."
I started to ask how, but she told me,
"Save your breath. We'll talk later."
It was good advice. Since I'd arrived at spy school, there'd been several times when I'd had to run for my life. But this time, I had to run even faster. My legs pumped harder than ever before, fueled by fear and adrenaline. Construction sites and earth-moving machines flew past us. Then we were out the gap in the wall I'd made with the bulldozer and into the field beyond. But as fast as we were going, it still wasn't enough to outrun the missile. It was coming in with astonishing speed, growing exponentially in size as it hurtled down out of the sky. Erica's hand was suddenly holding mine, clutching it tight.
"Take cover!"
she yelled, then yanked me into an irrigation ditch. I curled into a ball, and before I could stop her, Erica curled around me protectively. The missile came down right on the rec center. I had my eyes shut tight, but I still felt almost blinded by the flash of white light that surrounded us. The noise was so loud, my whole body vibrated, and then the shockwave from the explosion pummeled me as well. The ground shook. A wave of heat rolled over us. I could sense things tearing apart and flying past. And then, maybe because of the explosion, or maybe because I'd already almost drowned once that night and was in a delicate state, or maybe because I was just completely and totally exhausted, I passed out. I regained consciousness sometime later, but I was still disoriented and groggy. There was an incredible amount of activity going on at once, and I was able to process only snatches of it all.
My ears were still ringing from the blast, so I couldn't really hear anything anyone was saying. I was in the diner down the road from Hidden Forest, lying on top of a table. CIA agents were everywhere. Apparently they had commandeered the place.